Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today we're pleased to have Dr. Irvin Laszlo calling in from Italy on his book, Science in the Akashic Field, An Integral Theory of Everything. Dr. Laszlo, twice nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, is the editor of an international periodical, World Fitness, the Journal of General Evolution, and Chancellor Designate of the newly formed Global Shift University. He is a leader in new thought for the quantum shift in the global brain, which is his latest book, and he is the founder and president of an international think tank, the Club of Budapest, and the General Evolution Research Group. Dr. Laszlo is the author of 83 books translated into 21 languages, and we are very pleased to be able to speak to him today. How are you doing, Dr. Laszlo?
I am fine, thank you.
Are you calling from Budapest or from Italy today?
From Italy.
From Italy. Okay, great. I was absolutely impressed with your book, Science in the Akashic Field. I think it is, a landmark work and helps to explain many of the mysteries that metaphysics presents. Dr. Deepak Chopra, who has the quote on the front of the book, had written his work was called The Book of Secrets, and in it he talked about a Vedic astrologer that lived thousands of years ago that would go into an altered state of consciousness and read this Akashic field and then write the life history of people who would live thousands of years in the future. And Deepak Chopra said that he went, and sure enough, they had one of his life, and he read it. It started with his parents and, who he was going to marry, his children, and ended with the date of his death. And that was one of the most amazing things I had ever read, that degree of information could be read from the field and then stored and then retrieved later. And until I read your book, I didn't know that there would be a scientific explanation for that degree of accuracy reading the Akashic field. So the Akashic...
Well, I heard about that myself. there are people who are... There are places in India, actually one place in Kerala, where they have a library. It's called the Palm Leaf Library.
Right.
Where people can go and they'll find a palm leaf where there is the life story is built on it. And I know several people who went there and who have this remarkable accuracy. They find all their background, their story, their parents, their grandparents, mm-hmm. where they have been born, whom they have married, have all that sort of thing, and their life's mission.
Yes.
And they can also go forward. I wouldn't like to go as far forward to see how family finishes this life. But there's a remarkable accuracy on it.
Yeah. So Dr. Chopra, they asked him if he wanted to know the date of his death, and he said he did. So they told him. But basically, what is interesting about this fact, I mean, it is, there's no way that this could be a scam, is that they only read the people that would come later to get the palm leaves. You see the interesting thing about that? They didn't read everybody on the planet, but just the ones that would be guided to come in to see their readings, which is very interesting.
That's an interesting fact, because obviously there couldn't be. I mean, there are now nearly 7 billion people.
Oh, yeah.
In the past 2,000 years.
Yeah. Well, in your book, Science in the Akashic Field, you propose that the Akashic Field, which we'll discuss in a minute, is as important as the gravitational field, the electromagnetic field, and the Higgs field in terms of understanding manifested reality. Would you like to just start off with what led you to propose the theory? Well, the book is the theory of everything, and obviously the Akashic field is very, very critical to the theory. But do you want to just tell the background of how you became interested in this and the steps along the way?
Well, there are several things came together. One was the recognition, it's purely on the level of theory building, theory of reality, that this universe, which is becoming, it is very complex, and it's becoming more and more complex. Its evolution is toward an increasing complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And you just compare, you know, contemporary societies with the primitive societies, the human species with unicellular species, today's galaxies, you know, the evolved galaxies with the birth of a galaxy and so on. I mean, complexity is growing everywhere. So there was a recognition on the one level that you cannot build complexity from zero. Every time you innovate, you start from nothing. You have to build on the information that has been, or on the complexity, on the,
right.
you know, on what's left, on what you know about the complexity, to build further levels. And that means that the information that has once been achieved, that level of complexity, that level of system, has to be somehow there in some place in the universe, so that every system that it exists and that it undergoes, but periodically undergoes this, what's called a creative destruction or transformation or bifurcation, there are different names for it, or tipping points nowadays. So every time that there is a sudden change, you can't start from all over again. You know, you have to start from what there was. So you have to be able to pick up the information. So that's on one level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The other level, you know, is the recognition that information must be conserved in the universe, otherwise you can't explain why things are the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
The other level is my intuition that when you have achieved something, for example, a thought or an action or have something in a work of art or a piece of writing in science or whatever, and you cannot destroy it. I mean, even if a person dies, that thoughts that were in his or her mind somehow remain accessible, remain simply there. You cannot simply destroy it. Information cannot be destroyed.
Right.
We know that energy, that's one of the laws of physics, of thermodynamics, energy can't be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
It also can't be created. And I have advanced sort of these laws of information, which says information also, once it's created, it cannot be destroyed. The difference is, however, that information can be created. And it's created by energy being getting more and more complex, configuring in more and more complex ways. So various things are coming together. Until I started researching what is the physics,
mm-hmm.
what are the possibilities in the cosmology, in the new quantum physics, for the conservation of information. And I find that there is a very small step you have to make to add to the current theories,
mm-hmm.
To say that information is. That is generated is still there, and it's available to for further evolution, you know. And I add that one element, and then all of a sudden you find that everything falls into place.
And the basis of this field is that of the self-creation, the potentials of the universe for its self-creation.
You have to think of it in this way. You know, what we perceive is the surface of things.
Mm-hmm.
What we perceive is seemingly energy, or seemingly matter, you know, moving about in space.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like this matter is something solid, and space is nothing. It's emptiness. And it's not at all like that nowadays. You know, in the last 50 years, or even a little longer, physicists have discovered that space is not empty. In fact, space contains
mm-hmm.
all the energy that there is. This is a so-called unified field or quantum field. And this is a field of zero-point energies. You know, a lot of people talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you recognize that there is such a field, then, of course, your whole worldview changes because what you see is the surface. And the depth is the real reality is this almost like a cosmic mind, almost like the mind of God. It's a field of energy and information that constantly builds up, constantly conserves everything that is, and constantly communicates with everything that is, and links everything that there is. So underlying, you know, the manifest phenomena, there is space, and space is a fullness, which, by the way, the Buddhists and the Hindus have always known, they always
mm-hmm.
recognize that space is includes everything that there is, you know. So new physics is rediscovering space as a plenum, as a fullness, not a vacuum.
And really the basis of this space, or the Akashic Field, as you describe in your book, Science and the Akashic Field, is the premise that the field has intelligence, that it has a purpose, that it has a, it's not just random, like Darwinian theory, other theories of science, where everything is just a random event. Instead, the theories that you are proposing is that this field has a basis of intelligence in what it's doing.
You know, random simply doesn't work. Science goes through these big fluctuations. First, in the 19th century, scientists thought everything is determined. Everything works like a big machine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everything is once and for all, you know, it's there, mm-hmm. according to the laws of Newton and all. Then they discovered that things can be probabilistic. They don't work exactly the way they are. They look more or less, you know. And then they went over to the other side and said there's randomness and basically there's chance. And out of chance, the world builds up. But if you ask yourself, how come that this universe is the way it is? And you say, by chance, my gosh. You know, the number of possible universes, that physicists can compute everything, you know,
mm-hmm.
mathematicians. And the number of universes is 10 on the 500th power, which
right.
means one followed by 500 zeros. That many different universes there could be, you know. They go the trillion, trillion, trillions, you know. And out of this, only a dozen or less universes would be capable of giving rise to life.
Right.
To this level of complexity. So this universe, we could say, is very, very highly adjusted, fine-tuned, mm-hmm. as they say, to bring forth evolution, to
right.
evolve these complex things that we call living, or we call even galaxies, you know, solar systems, and the planetary surfaces, the complexification goes on. And from these little unicellular things, blobs, you get multicellular species getting more and more complex, interacting, creating ecologies, until we now have a beautifully orchestrated biosphere, which unfortunately we are disturbing a good deal,
yes,
but
we are.
Nature has built it up.
Well, that's what you're doing in your work now. You're being guided to help protect it. Einstein
yes.
said that his goal was the simplest possible scheme that combined together the observed facts. And I think that this is, you know, this is the basis of science in general. If you're going to come up with a theory of everything, it has to explain all of the anomalies. It has to explain what we introduced the show with, which is your theory of the Akashic Field actually does explain how these astrologers, you know, 5,000 years ago could have written Deepak Chopra's life history, including the fact his mother's name was not what he thought it was, but it really was what it said on the palm leaf. You know, it's just fascinating to me to come up with a theory that explains the anomalies.
Well, you know, nowadays it's not so surprising that it would have been that 10, 15 years ago, because now we have the Internet.
Right.
And we have computers with hard disks and mm-hmm. even more sophisticated devices that carry an incredible amount of information in very, very small space.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, a hologram, you know, you can have now multiplex holograms, which could be about the size of a cube of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And they could carry as much information as the Library of Congress in Washington.
Isn't that incredible?
Size of a cube of
yeah.
sugar. And you could, theoretically, retrieve from that every letter in any book, you know, any
mm-hmm.
volume. So information conservation is entirely possible now, we know. It's extremely, we can conserve information in a very dense way, a very
mm-hmm.
efficient way. So if you think that there is an energy and field that creates holograms,
mm-hmm.
that acts like a vast holographic field, then in principle, there is no reason why everything in this universe, not only on this planet, in this solar system or this galaxy, but over the billions of galaxies, everything that ever happened should
right.
be someplace in that field.
Well, I want to return to the idea of the infinite meta-universe, which I think is a much better explanation than the Big Bang Theory. But I want to ask you a question while we're on this subject of the Internet. Have you heard of the web bots that are being sent out by halfpasthuman.com to predict things like the 9/11, the economic crisis, and other things that are being predicted? Have you heard of that yet?
Somebody was telling me something, but I've never looked at it. I don't know about it in detail.
Well, it actually is something that is predictive from your theory. The web bots are, it's actually a technology where they send out these spiders all over the internet, and they look around where they're at to get keywords, and then they have a system of analyzing the words. And based on this system, they've come up with some very, very accurate predictions, including 9/11 and the tsunami, and you know, anything that really affects global consciousness is shown in this system of analysis. And this is not, yeah, this is not clairvoyance. This is not, you know, psychic. This is simply an analysis of data collected from the closest thing we have to the global mind, which is the internet. And so I find that very interesting.
Yes,
that that there might be a way to read this this field of information. And the other thing,
you know, there is somebody, let me tell you, this is a real fascinating thing. Somebody visited me a couple of days ago and told me that would I like to see what the ancient Mayans, you know, Mayans have said about me. And I said, my gosh, I mean, did they say anything about me? And apparently you can get on a site on the internet which where you can give your birth or date of birth and an hour and place, and you in a process, I don't know how it is, but they work on it about half a day or so, and then they come up with a personality description. Mine came up with about 3 pages which says that my symbol is the blue eagle, and my mission of all things is to facilitate the global transformation. Now, how would the Mayans think about this, you know, 5,000 years ago? So there are some incredible things, and it fits so exactly. Then they ask my colleagues, I asked to have them done, have my wife done, and it fits. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible how this information can be retrieved and somehow from some kind of a template, some origin that you get, and then from there on, it just pulls together. It's
well,
all there.
Yeah, that means that the hologram that you speak of is actually something that encompasses all space-time.
Yes.
It would have to.
Yeah, I mean, the universe is basically built as a hologram. What we see is the surface. What we see are the manifestations of it.
Right.
The actual reality is these patterns of information, energy. The two things go together. By the way, I don't believe that there is any such thing as matter. And nowadays, physicists also
agree with that general view.
Matter as such doesn't exist. There are blobs of energy, the configurations of energy.
Right.
But if you think that energy configures together with information, information is the software, energy is the hardware. You know, energy is there, but if you didn't have information, you wouldn't have this universe. You would have just a lot of, you know, atoms perhaps rushing about, and by that you won't have a really random universe. But information is what makes it run, and it's the software. So the whole concept of nowadays of reality, what I think is the sort of the real reality, is waves. Waves of matter, wave of energy, information, coalescing, you know, configuring, and creating all the phenomena of which we are part and of which we perceive with our eyes and our ears.
And it also builds upon the previous creations. In other words, the information gained from experience from prior universes is applied to our universe.
And, you know, there, you have a choice. At that point, as I mentioned a moment ago, this universe is so improbably fine-tuned that you can't explain it by random, by chance. I mean, serendipity just doesn't work when you have to choose one out of 10 on the 500th power, you know, possibilities.
Win the lottery,
Yeah, I mean, there's no chance, really, of practice. You would have to have a chance. You have to have it done 10 out of 500 times. Then you have a chance in one of one. You know, but how long? Even if you have 1 second of that, that would be longer than the age of the universe. Then you have a choice at this point. How do you explain it? The choice is you can say it was created by a transcendent divine purpose. And I'm not saying it's not possible. It's possible. It's one of the possibilities. But it's not science.
Right.
As long as you want to stay with science, you're trying to find natural explanations, causes and effects that occur in this world. If you have to resort to a transcendental divine will, then perhaps it's perfectly reasonable, but you are in theology. You're not in science anymore.
That's true.
So if you want to say in science, then what's the explanation? Mm-hmm. That this universe was no longer born as a virgin birth, as a human individual, as an embryo is not born out of nothing. The human embryo has all the DNA and all the information from the parents, you know. So this universe gets all the information from prior universes. It was born in the same planum, the same space as the previous universes. And one universe of creates another one, or is certainly inside the same space as the other ones, like bubbles emerging, you know, in some kind of soapy liquid bubbles are coming forth. And this is very often how our cosmologists are describing the creation of universes.
Yeah, the in-breath and the out-breath, which is, probably
that's how they would
true.
That's right, how the ancient cosmologists would talk about this. This is one of the out-breaths, you know.
Right.
We are in that universe. So, obviously, the universe is much bigger than what we call our universe.
Right.
Our universe has a finite time when it was born, has a finite time expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
Which we can put in terms of 10 on the 123rd or 134th power, depending whether the proton has mass or not. But one can calculate these things. Then all the black holes, well, finally galactic-sized black holes, will finally collapse and will disappear. What happens then? We would think that other universes continue. Other universes may be coexisting with ours, or may continue out of black holes. But certainly, it's not reasonable in terms of science to think that our universe is the only universe there is.
And from this meta-universe, or the basis of the field, that is all potential creation ever that could be done. I mean, that's the potential field, is the Akashic field. So
Akashic
that is what the universe is coming
field.
Out of. Right.
Yeah. The other universes probably are building on the information that every universe, previous universe, generates.
Right.
So our universe creates a template, creates the DNA, if you like, the genetic information of a cosmic kind, for the successive universes that come after ours.
Mm-hmm.
The thing we do, in a sense, will be carried forward in other universes.
So given that there is scientific evidence for the Akashic field, how can the individual person and, you know, the collective, humanity use this knowledge to help, stabilize things in the world that is obviously going through some growing pains?
Mm. Yeah, a very critical period right now.
Yes.
Well, it changes your view of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the so-called classical view, or classical science view, which most people still have in their heads, is that the universe is like a mechanism and all its parts are separable.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a simple, even bicycles are not that simple these days, but let's say it's a simple bicycle, where you can take off a wheel and then you can exchange it. This doesn't, in an organism, you just can't take off a part and just exchange it. It's, you see how complicated it is to transplant anything. You have to use the stem cells and all that. So, it changes your view. That means that you are not just a little cog separate from the rest in around you. When you and I, and all of us, we are part of the biosphere. The biosphere is part of the solar system and of the galaxy and of the cosmos. So we are part of a highly interconnected, organic kind of a universe where everything that happens is recorded, everything that happens affects everything else. Therefore, what you do to others, ultimately you do to yourself,
right.
Especially when it comes to your own, this biosphere and this environment that we have, which is a very different view from saying, well, I just take care of myself and never mind what happens around me, what happens to others and what happens to the environment. So it changes our view of the world, and it makes us, I think, more responsible, and it makes us more like family members. If you're a good family member, you don't want to harm other people in your family. The same way, if you're a good human being, you don't want to harm others, even if they belong to other societies and other cultures. You don't want to harm nature either. You have a sense of responsibility because you have a sense of belonging, and that's the kind of belonging that you've lost. And that, I think, this new concept of an information field, like the Akashic field, that we are all part of, that can lead us back to.
In Quantum Shift in the Global Brain, you talk about coherence and how, you know, certain actions lead to coherence within families, within communities, and then on out globally, and certain actions are incoherent and lead to discord. And then you reflect back on, you know, the epidemic we have on cancer, and I've always felt that, you know, in the study of metaphysics where it says as below, as above, so below, the issues that the global consciousness is struggling with will be reflected in the diseases that come forth in a certain time.
Well, there's a very close parallel. It's interesting that you mentioned now cancer. Last week, I was invited to address a business ethics symposium, which was held in the European Parliament in Brussels. And there were a lot of business leaders there, really, the CEOs of 12 of major companies. And I said that there is a very strict parallel between cancer and between a very self-concerned kind of a business enterprise. Because what happens in cancer, I mean, aside from any clinical details, the most general thing we can say that there's a group of cells that is no longer in communication with the rest of the cells, with all the other cells. All it does is reproduce itself. It no longer gets the information so that it can integrate itself to the rest. You know? A group of cells should always differentiate and become part of the organism. And this group of cells, the cancerous cells, just is stuck in a program, but all it does is reproduces itself. And ultimately, of course, it grows and invades the rest, and then it kills the host organism. And I said, why isn't this equivalent to a kind of a very self-centered management philosophy, which says that the only purpose of the enterprise or the business company is to make profit and to grow,
mm-hmm.
if you, without regard for the rest. If you do this, you really act like a cancer. You have got to reestablish communication between any part of the system and the rest of the system. Reestablish the sense of that we have to have a joint purpose. Just like a bone cell is not the same as a brain cell, but they together do something so they maintain the organism alive. The same way as a business company, as a private individual, as a good citizen, as and anybody else, you know, can be different from the others, can be Western cultures, Asiatic cultures, animist cultures, whatever. But together, we have got to maintain the system. Otherwise, you know, we will all suffer.
Well, it's very interesting that the multinational companies that have emerged in the last 50 years, such as Dow Chemical and other similar companies, are providing, unfortunately, pollution in the world, especially in the terms of chemical pollution, plastic pollution, that probably predispose to cancer. So there's another link there that's very interesting.
Yes. They are producing things that are good for them in terms of profit and growth,
mm-hmm.
but disregarding the so-called side effects, the collateral effects.
Right.
This is a bad military euphemism, but sometimes these secondary effects become more important than the primary uses of the product.
Yeah, and the precautionary principle, which is that principle that we really need to look at all the effects before we leash some of these things on the unsuspecting public, has not been followed, especially in the last 8 years in our government. The FDA scientists, I don't know if you saw the news report, but 8 scientists got together and kind of became whistleblowers on the administration of the FDA.
Uh-huh.
Science was not followed, so that's interesting.
You know, this is the integral world view. I mean, you need a more holistic, more systemic, more complex world view. It doesn't mean complicated. I always say complex is not the same as complicated.
Right.
It just means embracing more, seeing the forest instead of just the individual trees. You've got to look at the whole system. Gregory Bateson, you know, the great ecologist, said once, you can't do just one thing. And this is so true. We, big companies sometimes with genetic modification and so on, they say, we do one thing, we make maize, you know, more resistant to disease. But you don't forget all the other things that happen to the whole system of agriculture, the whole health system or whatever, all the effects that one thing can have on the other things. Everything nowadays comes back to you. Everything works in cycles, in the circularity. Nothing just goes away, you know. You think you can pollute the atmosphere and the wind will take it away. Not too long ago, we had the high smokestack and we thought, well, wonderful. I'll put it high up there, that disappears.
Right.
I mean, no, it doesn't go away. You can throw your chemical pollutants into the sea and you think it's washed away? No, I mean, because it's there. Mercury and everything else just gets concentrated in the sea life and comes back to poison our food. So nothing goes away. We're on a planet that everything comes back to us, finally. And that's why you need to have this kind of a worldview, which is much more capable of coping with this kind of complex systems in which we are living.
Yeah, and there was intent in the past, especially in companies like Monsanto, you know, intent to dominate world markets, and there was plans put into place, and some of those plans have actually backfired. You know, there's kind of a cosmic consciousness revolution occurring among the at least among the more enlightened people on the planet, that you need to look at things like you know, sustainability and global cooperation in companies prior to you know, investing in them or buying their products, and you see this coming up now in the press and in the collective consciousness that we're beginning to hold corporations more accountable, and I think next we're going to have to hold governments more accountable if we're going to see the macro shift that that you talk about in your book, The Quantum Shift and the Global Brain.
Indeed, I think the changes will come. We have to facilitate it, you know, by government, and we hope that the next government will facilitate change. But the change in motivation and the real driver for change is the way people think.
Mm-hmm.
It's what is known as civil society. And people's values, people's priorities, they are changing already. And it has to be facilitated, it has to be given expression, has to be made more, having given more political and economic weight, because otherwise the people individually change, you know, they may not have enough weight to change the whole system. But with some facilitation from the political leadership and with some understanding of the business leadership that it is on their own interest to be more responsible, because people sooner or later will recognize, as you say, that they better deal with responsible companies, and those are the ones that will survive.
Yeah, I think
that happens.
I think it's true. I think if you look back on, you know, especially intended courses of action that are not in the best interest of the planet, and those companies who have gone forth with intention that is contrary to what is best for the planet have had roadblocks that were interesting. I think it's an interesting thing to study. In your book, you talk about, the Quantum Shift and the Global Brain. You have a section on Manifesto on Planetary Consciousness, which was drafted by you in collaboration with the Dalai Lama and adopted by the Club of Budapest October 26, 1996. Would you like to comment on this manifesto?
Well, I would just like to say that at that time it was ahead of its time. People said, what do you mean by planetary consciousness? What does that mean? You know, I mean, we only have our own consciousness. Do you mean the consciousness of the planet? Of course, that's not what we mean. We just mean that we are going to enlarge the sphere of our responsibility, not have a consciousness that's limited to ourselves or even to our community or even to our culture or company. It has to embrace, you know, all people. And what I would like to say is that that was at this time, and now we are about to adopt. We are drafted, and the next summer we're bringing up for adoption a similar document. And we'll have a big, hopefully a big event, which we call the Global Emergency Consultation. Most probably it'll be in Canada in the first week in September. But we already drafted out a declaration, which we call the Declaration of the State of Global Emergency, which is not a doomsday declaration at all. It doesn't say that, you know, we are heading toward a doomsday. It says that an emergency is a crisis, and a crisis always is both danger and opportunity.
Right.
It's a chance to change. You know? So my next book is also called The Chance to Change. This declaration will spells out now what the main problems are, these unsustainable trends, whether it's climate change or the peaking of the production of oil and then mm-hmm. fish, and the pollution of air and water and all that, you know. At the same time, it suggests new objectives for business, for politics, and for people in civil society, people like all of us, you know, who can pursue a more responsible, more sustainable lifestyle, and communicate with each other like you are doing now, giving people to understand that sustainability is in their interest and is all of our interest. So I think this kind of changes will be coming. The question is, will they come in time before all these threatening trends reach a point where they will be a tipping point where it will be difficult to turn them around? And that's what we are trying to do. We're going to say change in time. Yeah, this is the time to a window in time that we're going to change.
Yeah, there is some evidence that, you know, there may be the split may occur in around 2012 where a portion of the consciousness goes in one direction and another portion of the consciousness goes in another, and, you know, perhaps there's a splitting at that point. Some of the religions have predicted 1,000 years of peace and other things like that. But when I look at all of this, I like to remind people that if indeed the Akashic field is the ground of all being, as Dr. Goswami would say, if indeed this is true, then we can bring the answers up from this field too. People forget that. People forget that this field is all the potential of all creativity, and what you can train people to do in their own perspective fields, which mine's plastic surgery, and I deal with a lot of chemical and biotoxicity from breast implants, so I know firsthand what the companies have created, and the FDA has rubber stamped. Basically, we have the ability to go into this field and get the answers. And I think that's what we need to tell people, that you know, we can, if there is a problem, there is an answer to it. And we have to go to maybe another level of consciousness, like Einstein said that we would have to do to solve our biggest problems. But we can do that. We can actually bring up the answers from the field that are going to work and show us which direction we have to go to solve these major problems.
Now, you know, it's interesting because we haven't discussed this ahead of this going on the air, but this is precisely what I'm just finishing a book, which is just precisely on this topic.
Yeah.
It's called The Akashic Experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm showing with quoting 20 people who have written about their own experiences in this book. It will be published in March, by the way. Mm-hmm. You can, when you enter more deeply into yourself, you enter your consciousness to pick up information from this field, which you can do by intuition, by meditation, by prayer, various ways. Just allow this information to flow into your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Very often you have insights, hunches, you know, that will give you answers to problems, and that will link you to other people, and we show the way, sometimes in just in a vague, intuitive way, but you can find a way once you allow your instincts, which you used to call instinct, which is really information from the Akashic field, you know, to come closer to you and not say that it's just all haberdash and it can't exist. Then, of course, your mind opens up. Then your brain becomes like a broadband receiver instead of just receiving on these 5 narrow channels of your mm-hmm. sensory organs. So this is, I think it's a remarkable possibility, and people are becoming more and more aware of this. They're waking up to the fact that we can have this kind of intuition and that we can connect with each other by allowing our mind to open to these possibilities.
So really, the split that we're seeing, or that's been predicted, none of us know what it will be like exactly, but this split that may be on the horizon 4 years from now in 2012 may actually be the point at which people either are able to go into this state of being where they have a very normal and sustaining communication with this Akashic field and bring up from it whatever they need. I mean, you no longer have to struggle, you no longer have to suffer, you no longer have to, you know, all the things that we think are inherent, death and taxes, you know, that type of thing in the third dimensional reality, but instead reconnect with this field, and we can bring up what we need when we need it. I mean, that's the visions I've been given, that you know, if you have a miscommunication in your cells and develop a cancer, you can go into this field and reestablish the connections, and the cancer disappears, kind of like with a spontaneous remission. But this is a spontaneous remission is a quality of the Akashic field. You know, whoops, made a mistake. Let's just erase that. You know, kind of like you reboot your computer. You know, whoop, didn't want to get on that path. Just reboot it, and then bam, spontaneous remission. And we can diagnose people with more intuitive methods and quit spending so much money on negative tests. You wouldn't believe the cost of healthcare in the United States is because everybody's practicing defensive medicine. They're running $10,000 worth of tests on something that they could look on a physical exam and see. This is, you know, it's not sustainable. So I think that as we go forward and teach people that through meditation, through spiritual practices, that they can actually reach the Akashic field, and have more people have the experience of reaching it and have the, and then that way we really do merge science with spirituality.
Yes, that's the way it's going, yes. I just would add that we don't wait until the end of 2012. I think that's going to be a very critical period, a tipping point, end of 2012. But there are certain processes that, for example, climate change among them, that if we don't act before to head it off, it could be too late by then.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So we have got to, the more people enter on this dimension and become responsible members of this integrated human family, the better our chances that we can then act. Because no matter how enlightened we will be at the point where we have gone past the tipping point, then it will be in tremendous difficulties, tremendous problems.
Right, that's true. Do you think that the problems have been hidden from the public for a while and are now just coming to light?
It was difficult to foresee the problems. It's interesting, there have a couple of articles been circulating now on the internet about rediscovering the report of the Club of Rome, which was over 30 years ago, where I was a member of the Club of Rome, you know, the think tank at the time, and they published this report called The Limits to Growth. And they said that within 100 years, the system will collapse if it goes on like this, if it doesn't change.
Right.
And this was developed, the first computer projections. So that was a big computer at MIT in those days with vacuum tubes and taking up several rooms
right.
and all
yeah,
that. Now there's a laptop that has more power than that one did. But anyway, that was the projection. And nowadays, people are recirculating this idea, yes, that if you already knew this over 30 years ago, in fact, in 1972, we published that book. And just now, sort of people say, aha, yes. So it's not that so much what's hidden. People didn't want to believe it.
Right.
They thought, well, let's just go on as long as we can like this, because this is business is as usual. Technology will take care of it. New discoveries will take care of it. Something will happen. It's not our business anyway. So there was a voluntary blindness.
Yeah, it's
even
kind of
like the evidence was there.
It's kind of like the Roaring Twenties right before the Great Depression. There's always a period of, you know, people just ignoring what's right in front of them before you get these collapses.
People don't believe it. You just ask how many people in Eastern Europe would have known in 1988 that in 1989 the whole Soviet Empire would collapse.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, we didn't believe it over here when we heard the Berlin Wall came down. It's like, what? You know, but there must have been. There had to be reasons for that and all sorts of things beneath the surface. I mean, there are things just don't happen. They have, things that occur before them that lead down that path. But certainly...
But they're reaching these critical points, which mm-hmm. are now known in systems theory called, or chaos theory. It's called bifurcation, popularly known as tipping points. It's even more popularly, it's point of no return.
Right.
You reach a point where you just can't get back anymore.
Right.
And then change is very sudden and very fast and usually surprising.
It's like the quantum leap upward in quantum physics. You know, it occurs suddenly, but there, the energy is being added to the system, and all of a sudden there's a quantum leap. And that's how I kind of equate what's going to happen in 2012. There's been all this energy being added to our system, and then we reach the point of no return. Would you like to give some of your contact information, websites, any other book information that you might like to?
Well, yes, I'd like to just call attention to the fact that we have just put up on our website maybe 2 days ago a draft of this declaration on the state of global emergency, state of the planet, you know. And this can be endorsed. We now have a website where people can get on it and can insert their name, and if they want to keep it private, they can do so, or otherwise it's not. We would like to get more and more people to read this and to say yes, okay, and they endorse it because they think it should be taken seriously. We're not asking, really, in this declaration anything more than to say the time is now to join together, you know, for collective action. Let's wake up and let each of us do our best, you know. And this is accessible at websites which is called, in one word, after www, one word, it's Club of Budapest, written together, .org.
So Global Budapest.
Club of Budapest.
Okay.
The Club of Budapest.
Oh, the Club of, I'm sorry, the Club of Budapest. Okay.
Yeah, all written without spaces. Club of Budapest.org.
Okay. All right. Okay. And, when do you think your new book will be coming out? Do you have a release date?
The Akashic Experience is scheduled for the 1st of March.
Oh, okay. Great.
It's published by the same publisher that did Akashic Field and the Quantum Shift, you know, so it's already in print.
Right. Okay. Well, great. Well, we'd love to have you back on to discuss that book. And basically, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listening audience? Any words of wisdom today?
Well, just to repeat what you know already, but you know, and but it's good to recall what Gandhi said, you know, be the change that you want to see in the world. It starts with us. Don't wait until political leaders, although now we have hopes that they will change. Don't wait until business changes. Don't wait until anything, anybody else changes. Do what you can. And then I think these many little butterflies, the butterfly effects, many little butterflies will change the world. And these programs like yours and discussions like we are having are the key elements where people all of a sudden say, yes, there is more to the world than this blind chance, random mechanical events that I can't do anything about. We are living in a living universe and we can change it. And if we just get in touch with it again, or recover our home or belongingness, then we will change it.
And do you have anything in the future that you'd like to share with our listening audience that is coming up? Any of your presentations or any other information about the organizations you're involved with?
Well, if they look at the website, they'll find all the various events.
Okay.
We are joining forces with the Earth Charter. You know, it's also a very big initiative. We are going to make this new declaration on the state of global emergency joined with the Earth Charter. And then with the State of the World Forum, which is going to be held 1 year from now in Washington, will be a big event, also will feature this declaration. And in the meanwhile, I'm talking about it. I'm going next Monday, actually. In fact, I'm going to Budapest. We have a big meeting on the ethics, new ethics in business. And we're going to talk about these issues. And I've just been, as I said, at the European Parliament in Brussels. I'll be going out to the Far East, and I've been in Japan about a month ago. So this, wherever I go, there is a new receptivity, far, far more pronounced than it was even a couple of years ago. So people are saying, yes, there is something is happening, and we've got to do something. And it's my task and the task of our group and people like yourself is to help people say, yes, you can do it. Mm-hmm. We can change together.
Well, we educate and then I guess give people solutions that are, you know, choices, solutions, get people thinking about the problems and the solutions.
It's not so difficult to live sustainable. Just look a little bit at nature. You know, nature doesn't waste anything.
Right.
It uses this enormous inflow of energy that comes from the sun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just cycles it through the biomass from one species to another. We're forgetting that we've got this enormous energy income that we have. Instead of living on the energy capital, which is the fossil energies.
Mm-hmm.
We forget that the matter that we have, the resources, material resources, are not infinite. And we just take it out of this, onto the earth and use it and discard it and put it back again in a degenerated way. So you can't keep doing that. We are living on a spaceship. We've got to use solar energy. We've got to recycle everything we got. And that's not so difficult, the technology to do it. An individual, we can already start doing it. And it's high time that we switched over. Otherwise, we'll ruin this whole spaceship.
Do you see in the, you know, the recent gas and oil crisis, do you see the corporations that were previously, you know, more oil-based having changed from within to find more sustainable energy sources? Are they making a good faith effort to do that?
I don't know. One has to be really inside to know how much it is. They claim that they do. They'll have to.
Yeah.
But whether they really are trying to squeeze the last profit, bit of profit out of the last drop of oil before they do, I don't know. We have got to prompt them to say the time to shift has come already now.
Yeah. So, you know, basically in looking at getting everybody to cooperate and go in the same direction, you not only have to address the governments, which is the UN an effective way to reach the governments, or is that something that has been less utilitarian? And then you also have to look at the multinational corporations, which are of like entities unto themselves.
Well, we need an organization that can help us focus our forces and help us pull together. The United Nations has a basic problem that was created in the aftermath of World War II when we thought that the nations, you know, the nation states are the ultimate units, and the United Nations is based on as a club of nations, so to speak,
right.
You know. And there is much more to the world than just individual national states.
Mm-hmm.
There are corporations, there are civil organizations, there are networks running across, you know, all these borders. There's pollution, of course, going across all the borders.
Mm-hmm.
So we have got to have something like a United Peoples organization, I've been saying. Something that pulls all people together.
You know. Right, right.
We need some kind of organization to help us coordinate ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And how, I mean, do you have any ideas about that type of organization? Have you had any epiphanies or any information about how that would look?
Yes. Even a long time ago already, in the 1970s, I wrote a book called The Strategy for the Future, where I describe a kind of a governance, global governance system,
mm-hmm.
not government, but just the governance system based on better ideas and more scientific ideas as to how you can work effectively together. You've got to work on multiple levels and allow the voice of the people to penetrate from the grassroots level up, and not only going from the highest level all this further down. So I think there are many good models that we could use.
Could we incorporate the internet somehow in that as a way for the
the internet is a tool, like every technology. It's an excellent tool for using it, but we have got to use it effectively. A lot of grassroots initiatives are there that are very valuable. Almost all the knowledge that we need is already being developed, but we have got to empower them.
Right. We have to link them. I mean, that's the challenge, I think, is to link all of the different components into one whole that then can move forward in a way that is
can.
Moving forward,
you
know, not moving backwards.
Yeah, exactly. But find the meaning, find the sense, find the see that one can, by pulling together, one can create what amounts to really a new civilization. You know,
right.
Which is not a unilateral, not a monolithic block, but it has a unity, like an organism, has a unity in its diversity.
And I think it's fabulous that you, who have devoted your life to being the visionary for this path, started off as a musician. And didn't know in that time period that you would be doing this later on. You had no idea.
No, in fact, the ideas that I started working on that changed my life came to me while I was playing the piano.
Yeah, because while you're playing the piano, you're in touch with the Akashic field.
Yes, I would say now. I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of our hour, and I want to really thank you for joining us, especially with the time difference. And I hope that you will be able to join us again when your new book is released in March. And
I'd be glad to, and I'm delighted to have these programs like yours, which are so important to share with people our both our problems and our opportunities.
Yeah, this is Temple of Health Radio Show, and we've been interviewing Dr. Irvin Laszlo. His book, Science in the Akashic Field, an integral theory of everything, which is the basis, the scientific basis, merging physics with what's known in spirituality and metaphysics into the integral theory of everything. And then his second book, which is The Quantum Shift in the Global Brain, how the new scientific reality can change us and the world. And, of course, it's always very important to apply your theories, and this is what the quantum shift in the global brain does, and he's going to be giving us more information on how we can do that as individuals with his new book in March. Again, thank you so much for joining us. This is Temple of Health Radio Show, and next week we will be interviewing Tyndall, The Jaguar That Roams the Mind, an Amazonian Plant Spirit Odyssey. Thank you for joining us.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.